I'd like to introduce Vicky A. from the Sharpsburg Miracle on Ninth.
My name's Vicky. I'm an addict. Wow. Holy moly. I'm nauseated. Up here. Whew. I want to thank the committee. Really nice weekend. Met some new people, saw some old people. Thanks for Erica giving me the call, I think, you know, the text. And then she texts me and says, oh, you're the Sunday morning. Oh, you know. But it's always an honor to be asked to share, give back some way in Narcotics Anonymous. And I got my story, you know, everybody else has their story. I'm nervous, Millie. I'm a survivor, like, of a couple things, and I'm a survivor of relapse. I'm a survivor of breast cancer, 16 years. I'm a survivor of a really horrific divorce. Been through divorce, yeah. You know, relationships, I'm not good at them. Still not good at them. Roberta told me I was talking in my sleep last night. So I guess I was rehearsing. That was my rehearsal. But you know, it's hard. It's hard standing up here, you know, knowing that I got to be honest, you know, about my life, what happened. I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope. I have two clean dates. My first one was June 28th of 1986. I got clean in Buchanan, West Virginia. Went to my first rehab there. And, you know, lived the dream, man. I lived it. I lived it for over 25 years. Came back to Pittsburgh. Be careful what you pray for. The Just for Today that I was reading talks about the 11th step, which, you know, spiritual, not religious program. And for me today, in my program, I'm all about letting go, turning it over, surrender. I don't want control anymore. Me control in my life, I made messes, and I prayed. I just prayed in the bathroom and asked God, my higher power, I call God. I'm not up here to try to offend anybody or stir up any type of controversy. You know, the part of the beauty of the program is our higher power, or, you know, who we choose to call our higher power is totally up to us. And we may have different beliefs, ideas, opinions, and that's okay. There's room here for everybody and everybody's opinion. It's whatever's gonna work for you. It's in our literature, God's what keeps us clean. And I'm fortunate I have a personal, very powerful, special relationship with God today. If I didn't, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here. And I may derail here a few times. I'm in this aging process. I don't call myself old anymore because, you know, I still have, you know, I'm vain. I got vanity. I got pride, ego, like all that shit. But, and a lot of stuff, like, I can't remember. I don't remember specifics, but that's okay because, you know, I want to try to share in a general way. So anyway, went to that first rehab, came back to Pittsburgh, and I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. And I lived with my parents for a while. I was thinking about that, and they lived in this North Hills area, Wexford, and I still had my car, and my dad would give me a dollar when I would like leave in the evening to go to a meeting, and other than that, I wasn't allowed to have any money. No money. And my dad was like, probably like my chief enabler, you know. He took care of me. He's still taking care of me. Thank you, Dad. So, you know, I went to meetings, and I wasn't too sure about if I wanted to stay here, if this was for me. I thought alcohol was my problem. I didn't think smoking crack or doing pills or, you know, heroin. Like, and I didn't think any of that shit, like, was bad. The alcohol was bad for me because I was a blackout drinker from like the jump, and I was so crazy, and I would find myself coming to, you know, in these situations, and I remember like sort of stalking an old boyfriend, and he had another girl in the apartment or something. I kicked his frickin' door down, and I had all these cuts on my feet. Like the next morning, I'm thinking, like, what did I do? We didn't have cell phones back then, you know, so we had to, hello? Yeah, that was me, you know. Driving drunk, you know, just crazy stuff. Never got a DUI, though. Never did. But that time in West Virginia was really, I was very much out of control. I got married for about 30 days. I thought that would fix me, you know. This is going to make me settle down a little bit, not be as crazy. His family hated me. I was like, you know, the devil incarnate. Well, of course that didn't work, you know. Nothing worked. I'd switch up doing this and that, and I knew what to take to get this feeling, that feeling. It just got worse, you know. I spiraled. Till finally, we used to have crack trailers down there. The crack trailer. And my dad, I think this guy called my father and said, she's like really nuts. She's out of her mind. You got to come get her. I can't deal with this anymore. He came and picked me up, and I'll never forget the look on his face. Total just disgust, I wasn't the daughter that he knew, you know. And after completing that treatment and coming back and sticking around here for a little while, I got the husband, I got the three kids, I got the house, got the cars, I went back to school, and I really liked school, and I like learning. I'm kind of like, I am a lifelong learner, I believe, and went and got a couple degrees, and I really liked what I was doing. I worked in a detox, I worked in hospitals, you know, that did treatment. I did just, you know, all kinds of things, mental health and drug and alcohol. I was one of the first nurses to become certified in addictions medicine. And I only say that because, you know, I knew what I knew in terms of addiction being a disease and, you know, different treatment models and blah, 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 you know, which probably kept me like sicker for a while. But it got to the point where there really wasn't property involved, but prestige, making a lot of money, and Narcotics Anonymous becoming less and less, you know, the focus of my life. I, you know, quit going to meetings. I was self-sponsoring. is extremely dangerous. You know, wasn't really talking to other people in the program. I was helping people. I was getting people in detoxes and getting them into treatment and doing all my stuff. You know, well, they were paying me big money to do that. I wasn't doing that for nothing, you know. And I'm not saying that people who work in treatment don't deserve to be paid. They do. I was working for probably one of the biggest, you know, healthcare provider in Pennsylvania. And it started getting like really funky. You know? Really, it was all about profit and money over people. And it just was getting, I was being asked to do stuff that I knew wasn't cool. You know, it was going against my, what little kind of moral compass I still had in here. And it got like sticky. It got real sticky in that area for me. And I wasn't talking about anything. And what I've learned here is, like my disease is up here. You know, it's alive and well. You know, it's up before me in the morning, you know, telling me shit. And if I'm, you know, if I hold on to that, it really grows. It grows and grows, and it gets monstrous. It's a beast sometimes up there in my head. And I, you know, in my prayers today in the morning, I ask God to come in, you know, come into my mind. Don't only come into my mind, come into my heart. What's in my heart generally comes out of my mouth. So I have to have all that kind of in alignment. And nothing was in alignment. It was all like jacked up, you know, everything was crazy, self-will, you know, I was just, my priorities were totally screwed up, and things that, you know, I thought were important at that time, and I, that's what I was kind of pursuing at that time. And I had 3 children, and I wanted them to have it better. And I had it good. I wanted them to have it better than what I had, even. My parents were good people. They were good people. I can't really blame them. I mean, I wasn't raised in a, like a, we weren't emotional at all. Like, there was no, nobody said I loved you, or nobody, you know, we got hugs on the holidays, you know, and nobody really, we didn't talk about anything. I mean, we talked about nothing. Like, if you had a problem, you figured out how to fix it, and then you went and fixed it, and then you don't talk about it anymore. You know, you fix it and kind of move on. My dad was kind of a white collar, corporate, you know, professional man, and my mother was a homemaker, housewife. And I hate to even admit it, but I didn't have a lot of respect for her then, because she was like taken care of by my dad. She was very dependent on him. He gave her her, you know, allowance, and you know, she ran the home and did all her stuff. She had her birthday club and her bridge club, you know, the gardening club, and you know, all that stuff. And I thought, oh man, that's not going to be me. No man's going to be like taking care of me and telling me what to do. And my dad was a good person and very generous and kind, but he was a little chauvinistic in that way. You know, that was the generation. That you know, that's what it was. And I had an older brother, and there's about 8 years between us, so he was not in the home a lot. You know, I remember he was always off at school, college. He was the hero. I was the scapegoat. But, you know, Bill was real smart, and he ended up with, you know, like 2 master's degrees. He was a hospital administrator up in Newcastle, and back in the day, oh boy, I am aging myself now, boy, career-wise for a woman, like you could be a teacher, you could be a nurse, or you could be a secretary. Those were like the 3 choices, you know, like you know, astrophysicist wasn't on the list or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. So I think I heard it. I heard my mother say so many times, if you marry a nice doctor, you know, you'll be fine. You'll be taken care of. I became a nurse, you know, as a result of that. I don't even know why. I think I liked the white dresses back then. You know, we had to wear these white dresses with stockings, and they'd do like a shoe inspection, you know, your white shoes, and you had your little hat, and it's cute. We were cute, you know. Anyway, so I became a nurse. I don't know where I was going with that, but I'm a caretaker. That's where I was going. You look up caretaker, my picture should be there. I'll take care of you. I want you to be okay. I want you to feel good. I want you to, you know, not have any, you know, wants or needs or like the hell with me. Who cares about, you know, it was all about you. All about, you know. And boy, I lost myself. I lost myself so many times, you know, through various periods of time. And that's what happened in my marriage, basically. We were living separate lives, and he was off doing his thing. He's in the program, too. You know, that was my claim to fame. Oh, you're so-and-so's wife. People would come up to me, how's so-and-so? It's like, what am I, chopped liver? Like, you know, it's me. Say hi to me. You know, it was like, oh, it was crazy. But you know what? We're like really good friends today. We had a nasty divorce. Nasty. Probably because I was using too at that time. I relapsed around. That didn't help. I relapsed around 2014. And here's what happened. I wasn't going to meetings. That's why it's so critical to stay connected. We just want to be connect. We just want connection. We want to feel, you know, a part of. We want to know that somebody is there for us. Somebody cares, you know, enough to maybe check on us here and there. I was prayed back in here. When I started coming back around, my new keen date is September 7th, 2020. People would say, oh, I was praying for you. So thank you. You know, it worked. I'm here. I'm back. It was hard. I can't tell you how hard it was coming back in here. I have so many white key tags, I could fill like a bushel basket because I couldn't stop using. That was the problem. Drugs and alcohol were my solution to all the problems, and probably 99.9% of them, I created. I made them. They're mine. And I didn't want to take any responsibility. It was your fault. If they just freaking leave me alone, it was them, this, that, the, you know, it was my job, it was this, it was that. It was me. So what happened was, I got diagnosed with the breast cancer in like 2010, around 2010. And me and my husband at that time were, he was sleeping on the couch, I think, you know, and we weren't okay. We weren't, you know, talk about being on even different pages. We weren't in the same book, you know? So I'm doing all this stuff on my own. With the cancer, you know, the appointments, you know, all this crap, had surgery. He went out of the country like 2 days after I had my boob cut off. He's gone. Oh, so I don't know what, and I was still clean then. I was clean, and something came over me. I don't know, and I must have still been like talking to God, and I just didn't want to be married anymore. You know, that got real clear to me that I just couldn't do it anymore. I was thinking of ways of hurting him. And I had a therapist tell me, boy, like, you know, you need to get away from him because, you know, something bad could happen here. And I'm capable. It's in me, believe me. was an angry man, angry, mean. And I wasn't working any kind of program, you know. I had no relief from myself. And I couldn't stand, you know, get to that point. I couldn't stand being in my own skin. It was like, whoa. So, had the breast cancer. 2014, my mother passed away very suddenly. My mom and I had a really goofy relationship. She was like my first bully. Very critical, very hard on me. But she was the best grandma. She loved my children. Best grandma, would do anything for them. And I saw her kind of transform, you know. My folks drank. My dad drank as a reward. My mother drank as escape. She took pills. I mean, you know, were they at? Were they addicts, alcoholics? I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know. I just know that it did affect how I was brought up, you know. So 2014, she passed away. And my dad was devastated. And my brother was up in Newcastle, and he wasn't doing well. He had a chronic condition. He had leukemia and had to have a lot of treatment and different things, blah, blah, blah. So he moved in with my father after that to try to kind of, you know, they were together and crazy. You know, it was weird. It was very strange. They had this dog named Fred, and Fred was, I inherited Fred. Fred was a mutt, and I don't know why they wouldn't take him to get groomed. When I ended up getting him, he had all these little dingleberries hanging off of him. I remember he was a mess. He just was a mess. Poor Fred. Anyway, she died in 14. So in the process of going through all her stuff and cleaning out stuff and getting stuff together and donating, blah, 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 I found a bottle of prescription pain pills. And not even thinking, really, you know, no defense against the disease. It is powerful. It's cunning. It waits. And I ended up, like, taking pain pills. And then after I took them, I thought, oh, man, I just used. Like, it just, like, dawned on me. Like, I just used prescription pain medicine. And it wasn't my prescription. I wasn't following a doctor's orders or, you know, anything like that. So that, like, unleashed the beast. It was out. It was out, big time. So, you know, for the next couple years, you know, I was getting and using. I was buying pills and getting pills and, you know, eating pills. And, oh, it was crazy. Just really insane. It was insane. Got real bad real fast. In 2016, my brother got real sick, and he ended up in the hospital. He had had a bone marrow transplant that didn't go well, and he ended up getting graft versus host, and he died, and I was with him. I was his power of attorney. I was my mother's power of attorney, and I ended up being my dad's power of attorney. So my brother died in 2016. I had to kind of take care of all that. It was rough. It was Christmas Eve, actually, that he passed away, and I remember sitting by his bed and holding his hand and telling him it was okay to go, you know. And then in 2000, Mom died 14. My brother died in 2015. Then my father died. My dad got sick. And that was like the icing on the cake. I said, well, gee, like, who's going to take care of me now? What am I going to do? I'm like orphaned. I have no parents. I have no family. I have nobody's there. Fred was there. I took Fred. I got Fred. My dad, he had Parkinson's real bad, and he ended up with that Lewy body dementia and was just like out of it for like 2 weeks, he was in the hospital. I took him to the hospital where I work, and I stayed with him, and he thought, he thought I was my mother. He kept calling me Jean, and he thought my daughter, Maisie, who looks like me, she's kind of the mini me, he thought Maisie was me. And we just kind of went with it. I never tried to correct anything, but it was very, very, very sad. And I remember we put him on, he was on palliative care, comfort measures. And for those of you that might not kind of know what that is, he was on, morphine at the end, the morphine train. And he just, I was in bed, I got in bed with him, and I said, it's okay to go, and I'll be okay. And I promised him I'd get clean and, get my life back together and blah, blah. And, he passed away. And that was a hard one. That was really hard, losing my dad. He was my cheerleader, my encourager, So all that kind of resolved, and I was off. I was off, off the hook, living in squalor. I was smoking crack again by this time, and that was the beginning of the end. And spending a lot of money and running, I was crazy. I was out of my mind. And my kids did kind of an intervention and said, because I wouldn't come home for days, and I'd be places, really where I sought out people, places, and things that in my mind were worse kind of than what I thought I was. So I could say, I'm not as bad as them. I'm not as bad as you. And I remember I was up in the projects, and I would go up there to get what I needed, and I was in somebody's apartment, and I needed to sit down. I probably weighed 90 pounds, and my hair was falling out, and not looking too good. And somebody said, "Oh, don't sit there. Those cockroaches will get in your pockets, and you'll take them home. Don't sit there." I was really naive to a lot of stuff, and here in my mind, I'm thinking I'm some gangster queen, I'm all that, me, the cream puff, But that's my thinking. I was so delusional and crazy. I really was. I was just crazy, 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 crazy. And nothing was making sense. And you know how we get at the end of the road, man. I was cooked. And then I kept thinking, you're too old to be doing this shit, because I was killing brain cells too, along the way. And I'm thinking, they're not going to come back. This stuff's not going to regenerate and come back. And I couldn't remember anything. And I'm an avid reader. I love to read. I'm always reading, two, three, four things. I couldn't even read a sentence. I got scared. It scared me a little bit. But my kids confronted me and said, you got to do something. We're done. You either get your act together and get cleaned up and do whatever, and you got to go to rehab. I'm like, what? Blah. Me? At my age? I went to Spirit Life in Indiana. Sandy. Yeah. And it was so wonderful. It was life-changing. It was just what the doctor ordered. God put me right where I needed to be, and I didn't want to go. I really was very, very, very resistant, to going, because I thought, what are they going to tell me? I know. That's what we say. I know. I didn't know. Obviously, I couldn't. I didn't know. I didn't know anything anymore. And I didn't want to go. Ended up going. Celebrated a birthday there, celebrated a holiday there. I didn't want to leave. I thought, oh, this is nice, go get your meals. I was on a schedule, looking a little bit better, So I ended up staying up there probably a good 3 months. I came home like in October of 2019. And I don't know, for whatever, you know, it's the disease. It is so cunning and so powerful that it started talking to me again, and I heard, this is what I heard, you can use one more time. Yeah, you know, you've had a couple months clean now, you know, it'll be all right, just once. Just do it once, and then, you know, kind of get back to square. Well, that's what I ended up doing, and it was a whole other year, you know, of insanity and ripping and roaring and all that stuff. And during that period of time, I didn't tell you about the other gentleman I ended up hooking up with, but I had had a relationship before I met my husband with a guy. Like, give me a guy with a beard and tattoos. And I'm like, ooh, I'm happy. But I, you know, here I was, you know, I did have reconstruction surgery, so the girls are good, but you know, I needed like, I didn't feel womanly, you know, I didn't feel like, you know, I was attractive anymore, and I was just, you know, the stupid stuff we talk. So I ended up hooking up with this guy, and he was in the program, but he was gambling, unbeknownst to me. He was, clean, but gambling. So we can substitute and do other stuff, you know. But anyway, we had it off and on for about 13 years. And when it was on and we were doing stuff and we were happy, and it, you know, sex was the best I've ever, oh my God, I'm on tape. Sorry. When it was bad, you know, when it was like icky, it got very icky, you know. But he just wanted me to get clean. God bless him. He just wanted me to get clean again. And he loved me, you know. He was one of a few that I could be myself. I was myself. The good, the bad, the warts, you know. The fungi, like all that stuff. He saw everything, and he still loved me, and he supported me in that way that I needed to get clean. And but he was like a drug for me. Honestly, I could not focus on him, and I was having trouble. You know, I was having a lot of trouble, like getting away from that and feeling like I owed him something. And, you know, the caretaking, and he was pretty dependent, you know, on women and them doing for him. And he used to tell me, because I'm a runner. I'm like the Bride movie, you know, run, just get away, blah, blah, blah. Like I was unavailable. That's what he used to tell me, because if there was a conflict or something would start getting too heavy, I would just leave. Bye. I'm out of here. And I used to tell him, well, you're incapable. You can't like run your life, you know, without your ex-wife in it. And he had two ex-wives and another ex-girlfriend, you know, was still in the picture, and they were all doing this and that, blah, 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 blah. So I finally, like, I was telling Roberta the other night, I sort of like ghosted him, I guess. Like I told him, I said, I can't like do this and get clean again. And I gotta get clean or I'm gonna die. And I don't wanna live my life like this anymore. It's hell. I have no joy. You know, I'm a mess. I was just a hot mess in all areas, you know? And so I had to separate myself from that. I had to get honest, you know? And my relationship with myself had to come first. And my relationship with God had to come first. And my relationship with Narcotics Anonymous had to come first. So That's what I did, 2020. And in 2021, I was close with his girls. He had two teenage girls. Georgia called me and said, you know, my dad's not doing well. And she said, I thought you should know. And I said, oh, well, what's going on? Well, he had stage 4 liver cancer. He never got his hepatitis C treated or checked. So I'm begging you, man, if you're at risk or you think you might have been exposed, get your liver checked. Get it checked. It was too late for him. He was diagnosed, and 30 days later, he was dead. He died. And he called me, and I said, what can I do? What can I do for you? What do you need? What do you want? He said, I want your company. So I moved in with them and took care of him. I took care of him for that month. He was on like hospice. Didn't want to take anything, you know. He bore, you know, his pain and his condition just deteriorated. And he was a big guy. He was like 6'3", probably weighed like, I don't know, 220 something. He was like a toothpick. I had to help him to get up to go to the bathroom. He wouldn't put a Depends or diaper on. I said, well, it's better than peeing in the bed, you know, but he just was stubborn. God, is he stubborn. So, you know, I was able to be there with him, for him. And it's funny now to me, it probably wasn't real funny then, but, and you might not find it humorous, but this guy's on his deathbed, okay, literally on his deathbed. And we're trying to talk, you know, about a few things. And I'm clean a year. And I said, I got a few things I need to get off my chest. He saw my wrath and my anger and stuff. And I said, I'm going to try to keep it nice. You know, I'm going to try to not like lose my cool and just tell you how I felt and what was going on. And so I'm like, you know, he's on his deathbed and he's like, you know, looking at me. And he's at the end of it all, you know. And he had these big, big hands. He was a tattoo artist. He was an artist, but he did tattooing. He would put his, like, paws on me, like up here. And I love that. I just love this, you know, the feel. And he said, Vic, you just didn't trust me. I said, that's right. I didn't. And I couldn't trust him with my heart. He asked me to marry him a bunch of times and wanted to do this and that. And I just didn't. There was something there. And I'm just gonna, like, he had a very sort of conflicted relationship with the truth. Like, I'll leave it at that. But, you know, honesty for me is critical in my life. The people in my life, in my recovery, honesty. Can't half-ass that. You know, you got to be honest. So he passed away, you know, lost him. And I don't know. I got blinders on now. I was telling Roberta, like, I haven't even really seen anybody that I go, ooh, I have a roving eye, you know. But I think God put blinders on me for a while to keep me focused. I think the, yeah, spiritual, not religious program for me, like I was saying, I have this little, I'm going to, a couple minutes and I'll be done. I have this really kind of sacred space outside my house. There's a deck, my little porch, and then a deck that runs all the way. And I go out there every morning, have my coffee, and that's where I do most of my prayer and my meditation. And I have some buddies that come see me. I have three cats at home now. I just had to put my dog down, like in February, and she was my buddy, Marnie. Part Rottweiler, part Border Collie. She was the smartest dog, like, ever. And she knew me. But the cats are out there, you know. My one cat befriended a deer. a little buck, and he had like 2 points last year. She would bring him home. They'd be out there like playing and touching noses and, you know, all this stuff. And she'd bring him home, so I would put stuff out for him. I feed him. I got the deer, I got the turkeys, I got the squirrels. I have a little herd of doe that come and visit me, and Mama brought her baby the other day to see me. And they know my voice. I talk to them, you know, and that's God. That's God in my life. And there's one thing, I'll just share this and I'll let you guys go because it's 10:34. when Nick was passing, I said, man, if there's any way you can break through, if there's any way you can break through and come see me, you know. I told him, come as a crow. I love crows. I said, come as a crow and visit me and see me. I saw the crow here, saw the hawk here. Those are like my spirit guides, crow and hawk. And then when I was leaving to come here, I had to go up to my daughter's house to pick up my camp chair. And there was a big crow in the road. I'm driving up and he's there and he's just squawking. Wouldn't get out of the road. I said, okay, Nick, I see ya. I'm probably gonna talk about ya. It's good, it's all good. Crow got up and left. I went to Jamaica with my daughter. Crow come on the table, took a french fry. Left, yeah, we're in Jamaica. It's good, it's all good, buddy, you know. He comes to me in my dreams. I have such vivid dreams sometimes. But, you know, I can't separate the steps, the program from God. It's God-given. It's a gift. It's God-given. It's a gift. Honor your gift. Keep your clean date. Don't give it up. Don't give up your clean date, man. It's a precious gift. God-given gift, you know, and then we're tasked with giving it away, sharing it. Share with somebody, talk to somebody. You see somebody sitting by themselves. I go up and say hello now. You okay? What, you know, you need help with something, whatever. We're good. It's all good. We're good. Thanks.